From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
Listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody says show business.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, the studios try to cash in on the video game business and get it right this time. And we talk to Uber producer Jerry Bruckheimer, who's also getting into the games game. Plus, why is the head of a big theater chain pushing the tiny heavy metal documentary Anvil? But first, on the Hollywood News Banter, an upfront on the upfronts. It's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm joined in the studio by The Business producer, Matt Holzman. Matt, what's the big story?
So the top story is the upfronts. By the time people are hearing this in Los Angeles, you'll be in New York covering the big TV advertiser Comfab. And how do things look as we speak right now?
The networks are very nervous. The upfronts have generated about $9 billion worth of advertising business in the last few years. And this year, everyone is expecting a big shot to that, as much as 20% off. So the networks are coming in. They're going to present their fall seasons. They're going to try and chat up advertisers. They're certainly doing it in a more scaled back way. The big, fabulous William Morris party that has been a staple of the upfronts is canceled this year.
Well, you know, they just merged with Endeavor, so they've obviously got their plates full with other things other than going to Costco and getting a huge amount of shrimps.
they used to have these lovely press breakfasts, and God bless CBS. They're the old-fashioned network. They are the only ones that are going to send us an invitation that said, come and have coffee and eggs and have the breakfast. And other people, they're just having like a conference call, and they won't even give you like a bagel and a glass of water. So it's dark days.
Well, everybody is cash-strapped, and that even includes the biggest media moguls out there, including Sumner Redstone, who, of course, owns Viacom. He's beginning to auction off some of his theaters in the U.S. and U.K. so he can bring himself back into compliance on the terms of his very, very significant debts.
Yes, so Sumner Redstone personally is not cash-strapped, of course, but Viacom and CBS, which is going to, you know, CBS, ironically speaking, back again of the upfronts, is the network that has done the best in terms of growing its audience a little bit when all the other networks are fragmenting, but is so exposed to the ad market because Sumner Redstone split CBS and Viacom, the parent of Paramount Pictures and various network cable channels, into two companies. So he was, in fact, out of compliance. He's had to sell about $233 million worth of shares in those companies.
But that even wasn't enough.
Yes, but he will not give up control. And I think there's a growing consensus on Wall Street that it is time for this 85-year-old man to let go of the reins. And Redstone persists in telling the world that he will never die.
Well, we'll see what happens. If, in fact, he cannot raise $1.6 billion by selling off some of his theaters, he will lose controlling shares in Viacom and CBS. And then that's going to change the whole landscape. So we'll have to wait until the auctions are over to see what happens there.
Okay.
Elsewhere, the week before last, it was revealed that Warner Brothers' important producing partner, Village Roadshow, hadn't been able to pay its part on a number of big 2008 films, but it's now restructured its debt.
Yes, they have paid up on films like Get Smart, Knights in Rodanthe, Yes Man, and Gran Torino. And so they have a restructure with $900 million, and they can come up with another $350 million to pay for movies.
Now, Village Roadshow, a very important producing partner of Warner Brothers, and they say that people in Hollywood can't keep a secret, but this is something that happened last year. And, this is almost, what are we talking about? $120 million they couldn't come up with, or some amount, that no one found out about until someone read financial statements that had a footnote to that effect.
Yeah, you know, $120 million is like half a movie if you're talking about a tentpole. So I was always confident that they would come up with this money and continue to make movies.
You must shop at Whole Foods with an attitude like that.
Absolutely.
Finally, the Cannes Film Festival opened on the 13th with Pixar's animated Up as its opening film.
And I know, Matt, this is going to make you happy because this is your favorite movie that you've never seen.
Well, I've only been defending it because people have been saying it's not good and they haven't seen it either. So I'm just saying we should just wait and see.
Well, one Wall Street analyst said that he was skeptical that this would be as big of a commercial hit.
And everybody picked that up as, you know, as truth. But now people at Cannes have seen it. And what did they say?
Well, apparently they stood and cheered, which is not always a reliable indicator of how things will play here. But I think in this case, the families will be going to see Up this summer. But I am told, not being in Cannes, that the feeling is rather subdued this year. That's what we read from people who are reporting from there, and that the economy has even come to Cannes. And that's all the news that's fit for bantering. Coming up later in the show, the CEO of Landmark Theaters rides the crazy train for the heavy metal documentary Anvil, The Story of Anvil.
All aboard!
But next, Hollywood plays games for fun and profit. Summer movie season is upon us, and that means not only big movies, but video games based on big movies. So, not only has the new Star Trek movie landed at your local Cineplex...
James T. Kirk was a great man, but that was another life.
The new Star Trek game has beamed down to your local Best Buy store.
As the Federation, or the Romulans, you can play as three different classes of ship.
Reporter Ben Fritz says video games based on movies are changing. For better or worse, depends on who you talk to, studio execs or hardcore gamers.
Video games based on movies, especially big-budget tentpoles, are a long-established but not particularly glorious trend that can be traced all the way back to 1982's E.T., an adaptation so awful that hundreds of thousands of unsold Atari cartridges were dumped into a New Mexico landfill. But there's something different about many of the movie-based games coming out this year. Watch their opening title cards and you won't find the names of familiar video game publishers like Electronic Arts or Activision. Instead, these games are being published by the same companies that are releasing the films. Paramount for Star Trek, Warner Brothers for Terminator. Almost every major studio is starting to invest its own money in the games business now. Disney, for instance, is increasing its video game production budget to $350 million per year. Why? Well, like everything else in Hollywood, it comes down to dollars and cents.
The DVD business has been tanking miserably.
Cody Alexander is an agent at William Morris who specializes in video games.
But game sales is still growing, and it's a multi-billion dollar business in the U.S. alone, and they want to be a part of that.
A decade ago, Hollywood seemed to be getting out of the video game business as fast as it could. Disney dramatically cut back its investment, while Fox, DreamWorks, and Universal all sold off their video game divisions entirely. But the studio's search for growth has led them back to the video game industry, which, while small compared to movies and TV, is still nothing to sneeze at. Especially when you consider that until the recession hit, gaming was growing at a double-digit rate. Lee Alexander is the news director of video game website Gamasutra.
People are starting to say that video games are trumping film in terms of the way they're able to retain audiences and pull eyeballs.
For many years, video game rights for films were handed out by the studio's consumer products divisions to the highest bidders. But as video games have become more popular and more respected, they've gained a new status in the entertainment industry.
A few years ago, I think there were some people that kind of viewed it as being a piece of merchandise, like the toy or the T-shirt, and didn't pay much attention to it.
Graham Hopper heads the Walt Disney Company's video game division.
Today, I think there's a whole generation of people making movies who realize that gaming has gone from being something niche to something that is mass and broad.
The problem is that games based on movies have traditionally sucked.
There is a stereotype that games based on film licenses are not as good, and they tend to be associated with lower quality. They tend to be categorized as hollow experiences. They often tend to be buggy or broken experiences, or so the common wisdom goes.
But it's tough to blame the game makers because it takes longer to make a video game than it does to make a movie, and they usually can't get started until the film is greenlit. Again, Graham Hopper.
One of the big challenges we face is the timeline. It takes a lot longer to make a good video game than it does to make a live-action movie.
It would be a financial disaster to miss the release date since games ride the coattails of that massive marketing push. Now that they're making more of their own games, however, movie studios swear improved quality is at the top of their agendas. As proof of their seriousness, the folks in charge of games for the studios are no longer the same ones making deals for T-shirts. John Cavanaugh, an industry veteran who previously worked at Tomb Raider publisher Eidos, now oversees video games for Paramount Pictures.
The studios are hiring from the video games industry to run those divisions, and that's a significant difference, I think.
Cavanaugh's competitor at Warner Brothers is the former president of Worldwide Studios for Vivendi Games. A former executive at game maker THQ is in the same role at Fox. There's some evidence that their approach is working. Several recent games published by the studios, such as Universal's Wanted and Warner Brothers' Lego Batman, have received largely positive reviews. And now the studios have started to release games based on library titles, like Paramount's Top Gun for the iPhone and Sony's upcoming Ghostbusters game, which will be released by Atari.
Ghostbusters, the video game.
Nobody enjoys rushing headlong towards their death more than this fella.
Coming June 2009.
But no matter what the studios promise or try to do, the real proof that games are becoming part of the process will come when film talent get involved from day one. And for a small but growing number of projects, video games are part of the mix from the initial pitch. Again, Paramount's John Cavanaugh.
The filmmaker's interest level is getting higher and higher, not just as a vehicle for promoting the movie, but from an actual content perspective.
Amongst the big-name directors who've developed or are currently working on video games, Steven Spielberg, John Woo, Tony Scott, and Zack Snyder. But the question remains, will gamers, particularly the skeptical, hardcore crowd, accept Hollywood into their midst? Games journalist Lee Alexander thinks there's a hurdle to be overcome, but not an insurmountable one.
Perhaps initially there would be some reaction of suspicion from the core audience when something has a label like Paramount on it. But I do believe, and maybe I'm optimistic, that the community just has a vested interest in seeing quality products, and that that is a credibility that the movie studio certainly can earn.
Many studios are starting to understand the best way to earn that cred is to make great games that don't even have anything to do with their movies. Disney Interactive Studios has launched several original games in the past year, with hopes of creating a franchise of its own. Division head Graham Hopper says it's no longer just about selling units.
It's also about ultimately creating new intellectual property in games that cross to other parts of the company. In many ways, for us, that's the Holy Grail.
For The Business, I'm Ben Fritz.
The studios are embracing video games in a big way, and last week, no less a player than Uber producer Jerry Bruckheimer announced that he is launching his own video game company. He's cranked out hit movies from Top Gun to Pirates of the Caribbean and conquered TV with shows including the CSI franchise and The Amazing Race. And now he's hired two high-profile games executives to run the new Jerry Bruckheimer games. Jerry, why are you getting into games?
You know, I always like to, you know, look at new horizons and try new things, and it's really an extension of what we do. We're storytellers. We, you know, build characters, and that's what these games are becoming. And in the next 5 years, they'll be like movies. I mean, they'll be lifelike. They'll, you know, have dialogue. They'll that's the future. So I might as well figure out, get in early and figure out how to do it and hire some really talented people and see if we can add the same kind of stuff we've been doing for movies and television. I mean, we didn't know much about television. We got into it 10 or 11 years ago either.
Are there similarities or big differences between movies and games?
When you look at the games, they use a lot of the same kind of visual stimuluses that we do, the shots, the music, the, you know, the kind of energy and the things that we do in some of our big action movies. So, I mean, it's something that we pioneered for movies, and now they're using it in games, and hopefully we can join that group and hire two young, talented executives who've been doing it for a long time. So,
why are you starting from ground zero in a way? Because you could have just kind of partnered up with an existing company.
Well, I think, you know, I like to build things from the bottom up. That's how we did it in television. You know, we hired a couple people and just started building our own properties, and it worked out well there, and hopefully we can, you know, bring that same kind of energy and talent that we draw to games. So we have, you know, we cross-pollinated in, from our features to television. I think we could bring a lot of very talented people who work on our movies and work on our television to games.
So you have a certain culture and a certain style, you would say, maybe, right? And that you can bring that, you think you brought that from movies to television?
I think so. I think, you know, our visual style, the kind of people we hire to do our TV shows are very similar to the people we use for our films. So I think it's the same kind of visual language that we understand.
But is it clear to you that a game is a different animal than a movie?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, sure. You know, there's no dialogue, so there's a whole different set of rules.
Different that way, right?
Exactly. So, but, you know, when you create excitement, and we create excitement around our movies, our TV shows and games, I think we can create the same kind of excitement, we hope.
Now, you have said that you don't play games yourself. I mean, I don't know if somebody said they were going to produce movies but really didn't watch that many movies. You might take a dim view of that, but you think you have a through line that can bring you to this I think that
what we do is, since I do have some experience with gaming and I bring in people that really know it inside out, if I've made the right choices, which I think I have, it's going to be very exciting what we do.
I mean, do you regard this as something that you're going to learn and that's why it's interesting to you?
Well, I learned television, I learned movies. Listen, I started in the mailroom. So, anytime you get, I didn't know anything. So, we're hopefully quick learners and we can pick this up.
Jerry Bruckheimer is the producer of hit movies from Top Gun to Pirates of the Caribbean and television shows including Cold Case, Without a Trace, and a whole lot of CSIs. Jerry, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Kim.
You just heard producer Jerry Bruckheimer say that story is the key to great entertainment in movies, TV, or video games. No one would bet against Bruckheimer, but games are a different animal. Producer Matt Holzman spoke with Chris Dahlin, a freelance writer on games and pop culture for Variety, Edge Magazine, and the Onion AV Club.
Chris, when you hear movie people say, games are just like movies, it's all about storytelling, what is your reaction to that?
It really bothers me. I disagree with it, and I don't think the analogy makes much sense. A better analogy really is music. Playing a game is like a musical performance. You know, the players can do whatever they want. Sometimes there's a lot of room to improvise, sometimes only a little. Sometimes you're loyal to the cover song, sometimes it's a jumping off point. Sometimes you vamp on something for hours, sometimes you just play it really quickly for 2 minutes.
Well, obviously, more and more games are looking like movies, but the fact that they look like movies does not make them movies. Can you tell me specifically how a game is different in terms of the experience of the gamer from watching a movie?
One of the big differences is that the player controls the camera. No one ever goes to a movie and has to be their own cameraman. I recently played the game Velvet Assassin, and there are a lot of scenes that take place in World War II, and there's wreckage. You end up in the ghetto in Poland. They're trying to evoke all these horrors and show you all this horrible imagery. But it's one thing to do that in a movie where you can control how long you linger on something, how you light something, how you really present what someone is supposed to be looking at. And it's another where someone could be standing in a room for hours doing whatever they feel like. Hayden Blackman, who worked on the most recent Star Wars game, The Force Unleashed, put it really neatly, which was there's the in-game story and the out-of-game story. And the in-game story is what you write into it, and it says, okay, the game has a protagonist, he goes up against Darth Vader, these things happen, and this cutscene or these couple cutscenes are what you're going to see at the ending.
Okay, a cutscene is a part of the game that you don't actually play, you just watch it.
Yeah, cutscenes are the most movie-like part of a game because it's basically an animated film or some kind of a thing that you just sit back and watch. It gives them time to do exposition and maybe to make the story a little richer. But the whole time it's going on, which could be 2 minutes or five or even 45 minutes long, you're just sitting on your couch watching a movie, and you're holding your controller, and you're waiting to start playing again, but you have to kind of sit and watch this. And people are getting really concerned about, the cost involved and whether they're not engaging, whether people just skip them, whether that's really a good way to tell the story, or whether it's more like kind of jamming title cards into silent films. It's kind of a workaround to something you feel you need to do. I feel like those are starting to get phased out. I feel like enough people are starting to wonder, do we really need those?
Well, it's interesting because what you're saying is the thing that is most movie-like in games is the thing that gamers like the least and that may be on their way out.
It's a hunch that maybe they're starting to get on their way out, but they're definitely under fierce and constant criticism right now. There's sort of this feeling that there'll be some cases where they're useful, but in a way they just kind of don't belong because that's not the medium.
Coming up next, more with critic Chris Dahlin about how video games are a lot more than just movies with joysticks. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. 10 years ago, the studios tried to get in the video game business and failed. Now they're back, and this time they're hiring experienced games executives to guide them. Uber producer Jerry Bruckheimer is also getting into the act with his new games company. But video games critic Chris Dahlin wants to remind them, video games are not movies. Chris is talking to our producer, Matt Holzman.
I want you to play devil's advocate to yourself. How are games like movies so that movie people and their skills can be applied to games and make them fantastic?
I think there are basic conventions of telling a good story that you have to bring to a game. That's something movie people understand. I was recently at the Game Developer Conference, and Star Wars, the very first Star Wars especially, is still kind of the ne plus ultra of how to tell a story about a hero defeating an obstacle. I don't think games have to be simple, but they usually work well when you have a really basic elemental plot line like that.
So the one thing that the movie people, both the studios and Jerry Bruckheimer, who is starting up a games company, seem to have gotten right is that they're hiring executives from the game companies. Do you think with those people at the helm of their games divisions, they're in a better position to make games that gamers will like than their previous attempts, which were basically movie people trying to make games? Is that going to make a huge difference?
I think it's always better to have someone who actually understands the medium. How that'll pan out depends on the budgets they get for the games and the approaches they take and, you know, whether they can make something that's really more like a game or something that really is kind of tied down by the need to tell a particular kind of story.
Do you think that if they're open to listening to game people talk about the way they play games, that the movie people, using their extraordinary skills of painterly skills, of music and acting, that they can create games that are better, however you want to define that, than the games that the game companies have been creating?
No, I don't necessarily think so. I think they'll always bring new ideas to it, and that's always valuable, but Tetris is one of the best games of all time, and I don't think anyone with a Hollywood skill set could add anything to that. I'll put in one other thing that Pixar, I mean, what's a better film studio than Pixar? I mean, they're amazing. They have this great track record. They're very experimental, and their games are awful.
Chris Dahlin is a freelance writer on games and pop culture for Variety, Edge Magazine, and the Onion AV Club. His website is savetherobot.com. Chris, thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, my pleasure.
When they were kids in the 70s, Steve Lips Kudlow and Robbo Reiner put together Anvil, a heavy metal band that made it to the big time. Though fame never found them, they've kept on rockin' right into middle age. Now, a tiny documentary has captured their story and the imagination of Landmark Theater CEO Ted Mundorf. Landmark originally booked Anvil, the story of Anvil, in about a dozen theaters around the country, expecting it to run for just a week. But Mundorf has been out there talking up the movie. You could call it the real Spinal Tap. And now it's in its sixth week in Los Angeles. The band has been traveling around the country playing in theaters that are showing the movie. Last week, Anvil played at the New Art Theater in L.A. It was standing room only. Landmark CEO Ted Mundorf couldn't even get in. His theater chain shows serious art films like Sin Hombre and blockbusters like Angels and Demons. And Mundorf's not even into heavy metal. So why is he spending his time promoting a movie like Anvil?
I did not see the film until opening night, which was 5 weeks ago now, at the New Art Theater in Los Angeles. And at that point, I knew there was something special. There's a purity to this film that I rarely see in anything. The two stars of the film have persevered with such a wonderful attitude that I wish I could have that attitude every day of my life. The attitude of it's going to be okay, it's great, and look what we're doing and we're getting there. So it's really a tiny film that has very little marketing dollars behind it. And the reality is we have to pound the pavement to get the word out.
Now, let's be clear, you have no points in this movie, no profit participation.
I have none at all. I absolutely fell in love with this movie and decided, you know, what a great opportunity I have in the position that I hold to help a film get out there and get the word out on a movie that needs all the help it can get, because it's competing against Star Trek and it's competing against Angels and Demons that have $50 to $100 million in marketing budget to open on opening weekend.
Now, have you done this for a movie before?
We get behind movies and we employ 10 local publicists that help enhance the movies and get publicity out in among all the 400 films that we play in a year, but some films need more help than others.
I mean, does this stand out? I mean, I'm trying to see whether this is like the most help you've ever given a movie or...
Inconvenient Truth was a film that we were very, very passionate about that we saw early on and felt that... It actually could go all the way. And this one, we're a little bit more visible because it needs so much work and getting them from theater to theater to actually play either before the film or after the film has been something that we haven't done before.
So is this your idea to do this in the theaters?
Yes.
You personally said, let's have them do this in the theaters?
Opening night at the New Art Theater, the band members were there and the director was there and the producer was there. And I said, why can't the band perform after the movies? And they said, that's a great idea.
So do you pay for them to travel from theater to theater and help them set up their equipment?
Well, no, they're doing that on their own. We do help them with some rental of equipment in the theaters. And we started off, I have to tell you, that we did a sneak program for free. And we went out to all the markets that the film had not opened in, and we basically had a free showing in the marketplace and so that we could get the word of mouth out.
How many cities can you do it in?
We'll probably do it in about 15 cities.
And does this create a problem? Like down the road, you get another documentary and then they want to know why you aren't supporting them the way you supported this one?
I think this film's fairly unique, and I think that the... What seemed to me was an obvious way to help the film, which was performing in the theaters. It doesn't really apply to most films that come out. And the fact is you have two guys that are working this film like I've never seen anyone work. They're in the theaters every night. They're there till 1 o'clock in the morning and shaking hands. And the people are just people like me who don't know heavy metal. It's people that are heavy metal. And it's everyone in between. It's
well, so really, how is it doing?
We're a little bit over $250,000 now in only 19 theaters. So we're it's a little at a time, but I think we'll get there. And we'll get up to about probably $500,000.
That's so tiny in what we're talking about. I mean, you're playing Angels and Demons. You're playing Star Trek. And then you have this teeny movie that is going to, in its whole lifetime, gross a fraction of what those movies do in a day.
What, in an hour?
In an hour. And it's worth it?
It is worth it. You know, I think many of us are in this business because we love movies and our passion for the movies. And when we find something that is so special and so unique, I just want to be the town crier and tell everyone, please see the movie.
And just to compare and contrast, I would assume you have to do nothing to help Angels and Demons and Star Trek.
That is correct. There's plenty of horsepower already on that film.
But you're expending some company money on this little tiny movie.
Absolutely.
Ted Mundorf is the CEO of Landmark Theaters, which has 57 theaters and 24 markets. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And that's The Business. If you have any questions or comments about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.org. You can also listen to this or any past program, comment about the show, and engage with other listeners at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with the click of a button from our new media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Groman. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters, and we'll see you next week on The Business.